Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Virgil Cain is my name, and I drove on the Danville train till so much cavalry came and tore up the tracks again. I took the train to Richmond that fell. It was a time I remember oh so well.
Thank you, Blood River Radio family. You forgive me, I'm very emotional, about to cry now. We're playing that song in honor of all of our listeners, but especially in honor of the Bitter Ender himself. No one has done more for our people to kind of get our young, especially our young people's chin out of the dirt, where it's been rubbed into the dirt by the international establishment that hates white people and hates our history. They hate our guts. They especially hate white Southerners. I was tempted to let that song go. It is so beautiful. That was Joan Baez. I think that was 1971.
Yeah, that's a good one. The night they drove Old Dixie down. It's a good song. It's amazing she recorded. She's not exactly a Southern belle, but she did a real good job on that song. Give her credit for that. And they talk about, you know, things that did happen. That Danville Railroad was one of the last lines into Richmond that they had open to bring supplies into Richmond after Grant laid siege to Petersburg. And some of the more direct, the Weldon Road and things like that, railroad, had been cut going south. So supplies had to swing way out to the west and then come up through Danville, Virginia, and into Richmond from the far west. They couldn't go use a direct north-to-south line because the Yankees had enough men to keep sending their entrenchments further and further west and cutting off the roads and the railroads coming into Petersburg and thus up to Richmond. So, yeah, that song was about the Danville line or the Danville Railroad. And Stoneman's cavalry, Yankee cavalry, was always trying to wreck the railroad, go down there and tear it up. But they weren't as good at taking out a railroad as Bedford Forrest cavalry was. When Forrest took out a railroad, it stayed out for most of the war. So luckily, he didn't study any Forrest tactics, or they would have never gotten the line running again. So, yeah, that's a good song. It is emotional. It really is. A song about the death of our country. It's what it is.
We played it for your honor too, Gene. And
thank you.
Because you're the man. I'll tell people. I may have said this before, but people, I think I've come more and more and more to appreciate the third hour with the Bitter Ender with Gene. I'm really emotional right now, Gene Andrews.
I'll tell you another good song you might want to play. It was a poem by Ennis Randolph in the 1800s. After talked about how he hated Reconstruction, and then it was turned into a song in I think the 1880s. I'm a good old rebel. And if you ever saw that movie, The Long Riders, about the James Younger gang in Missouri after the war, it was in that movie and featured as a song in that movie. But my favorite verse is about how they killed 300,000 Yankees. They died of Southern fever and Southern steel and shot. And I wish they were 3 million instead of what we got. So it's a kind of an in-your-face song.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's really about that song. That song's really emotional. But I'd like to say, our white kids were under such attack. Not just the kids, but we've been taught to hate themselves in school. They've been caught that the just like that just like the Confederate general, Gene, that you have made on the on our one of our commercials that you made. You know, they said that if we lose this war, it's a commercial, but you can go ahead and say it when I get through with this. This is probably the third hour of Confederate history, may be the most important thing we do on Blood River Radio, because we are actually, I mean, it's history. If I can put this, where Karl Marx knew it, he said it, that before we can conquer a people, a young people, we have to cut their ties with history. We have to cut their roots.
Exactly.
Have no history.
That's what communists do. That's part of the Communist Manifesto. And the stupid fools that we have running the country now can't realize that and go along with this and say, well, you know, that's history. That doesn't count anymore. We all have to get along and do all this stuff. Well, the so-called conservatives that we have in our government are playing right into the communist hands. And they're too ignorant to see what they're doing. And they're just used as tools of the communists to destroy this country from the inside. I hope Mr. Trump can get some of it turned around. But, you know, the so much of our population is so ignorant of their history. And stupid people are much easier to control than intelligent people, because intelligent people will read, get other sources of news, study factual history, and it's hard to pull the wool over their eyes. But ignorant people are very much easier to control and just tell them how to go out and vote like a herd of sheep and keep these clowns in office. So it is important to know your history and know what really happened. Whether you agree with it or not, at least know what really happened. And then you can make decisions on factual information and not just propaganda from, you know, Whoopi Cushion Goldberg and The View or something like that. And people who get the history from that are not real smart. So anyway, but thanks for playing the song. It is a good one.
Yes. Our people have to know their history. There's nothing more important. I'm going to shut up. I just can't stress that enough. What could be more important than saving our white kids? Who gives a damn if we have some white kid that turns into be the greatest astrophysicist you ever see if he hates himself and does not have white kids because white people are germ and need to be exterminated? But I'm going to shut the hell up one more time. That's why this hour is so important. Go ahead, Gene.
Okay, Eddie, we were going to talk. We were going to talk a couple of weeks ago before the holidays on the Confederate Constitution. We kind of got sidetracked. We're going to do that along with the Confederate victories and shutting down the big victories that Lincoln thought he was going to have for his Emancipation Proclamation going into effect on January 1, 1863. So he ordered all these federal armies to move out of Washington, to move out of Nashville, to move out of Memphis, and win these great victories all over the South to boost up his emancipation. Well, didn't really work that way. He got after Burnside and the Army of the Potomac. They got their rear end handed to him at Fredericksburg. Lee and the Confederates were waiting on the ridges above Fredericksburg for that. Sherman thought he was going to just march into Vicksburg from the north side and unloaded his army in what was a swamp at Chickasaw Bayou. And the only way out of there was on a raised causeway, the road out of there. So they were marching out. Well, the Confederates were waiting
turkey
for
shoot.
It was on the bluffs, Chickasaw Bluff or Walnut Hills, I call that battle there in the end of December, and just mowed them down. And then, of course, Grant was coming overland, and he was going to coordinate his attack with Sherman and attack overland through Mississippi and come into Vicksburg from the land side. And Bedford Forrest and Earl Van Dorn took out his supplies, and Grant had to turn around and scurry back to Memphis until he could get a fleet to help him out. So, and then we're talking about John Hunt Morgan and his raid into Kentucky and burning the Big South Tunnel and cutting off the Louisville and Nashville Railroad. And Lincoln had to threaten William Rosecrans, who was head of the major federal army in Tennessee in Nashville. He threatened him with relieving him of command if he wouldn't get out of Nashville and go after the Confederate Army of Tennessee under Braxton Bragg. So Rosecrans reluctantly started inching his way out of Nashville, and I mean inching his way out of Nashville on Christmas Day. And that's where Joe Wheeler rode completely around his army and burned about 300 of his wagons and captured supplies and everything, and finally ran into Bragg at the Battle of Murfreesboro on December 31st. So anyway, that took a lot of our time, but I think it was interesting because you said you hadn't heard of some of these people. So that's what we want to do, is try to give our listeners some history on little known facts about our war for Southern independence. And tonight I thought we would get back to what we were talking about on the Confederate Constitution and why it was important and what it covered and how it set up the government of the Confederate States of America. And I really do, I believe this Constitution is a lot better than the one we have today, not necessarily because Southerners wrote it, but because they had about, 60 years to look at the old one and said, well, it looked good on paper, but it just didn't work out. And we'll get back after the break and tell people what they did do with this Constitution.
We're all waiting to hear, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips, anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get out of the way because I might have taken up too much time already, but that was playing the emotional song, but I thought that would add to the program. But go ahead, Bitter Ender, continue on where you
okay.
were.
Okay, we're going to be talking tonight about the Confederate Constitution. Most people never heard of it because, as we were saying during the break, the winners write the history books, and they don't want you to know about this. They don't want you to know what the Confederate government actually stood for. And all they can tell you is it stood for slavery. And yet that they beat us over the head with that every time anything is mentioned about the South or about the Confederate government or the Confederate Army or anything. And that's been, propagandized for 160-something years, and most people actually believe it. But that wasn't it at all. A lot of the information came from a book, The Confederate Constitution, 1861, by Marshall DeRosa, and he's professor of political science at Florida Atlantic University, and really a great writer and a very interesting book. And so these are some of the ideas that the Southerners had, and what you have to understand, we had two basically different cultures back then. The Southern colonies were settled by the Celtic people from Scotland and Ireland and Wales. And, you know, there were French and there were other nationalities in there, too, but the majority. And the majority of the northern colonies were settled by the Anglos from southern England, the Puritans and the Pilgrims of that sort. And they were just exact opposites in their government and lifestyles and everything about them. And the Puritans believed that the whole country, they should run the whole country, from all the way up from Vermont all the way down to the Georgia colony. And so they felt like, you know, that they were the superior race and that everybody should bow and scrape for them and do how they saw this country to be set up. The Southerners didn't think that way. And so we don't care what you do in New England. You do it any way you want to, but don't tell us how we have to live our life. And not only was the philosophy different, the climate was different. You know, the South was too hot to have manufacturing. So we became an agricultural country. And the rocky soil and the climate that they had in the North, they had to turn away from large-scale agriculture and embrace shipping and manufacturing. And I heard one historian say, if the Northeast had been settled last instead of first, it would still be uninhabited today because of the rock and the soil and the climate up there. Yeah. So you had two entirely different cultures that could really never live together unless one side forced the other side at gunpoint to submit and to the opponent's political agenda and political philosophy. So this was one of the reasons why the South left the United States. They just saw this as going nowhere. And there's an interesting book that's just come out by Thomas Woods. It's called National Divorce, A Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences. And he's pushing the idea of secession. And we've talked about that on several of our programs. And so that's what the Southerners did. They said they didn't want to go to war with the North. They weren't going to force the North to be like Southerners and adopt our lifestyle and our history and our heritage. Said, why don't we just leave and let them do what they want to? And so that's what we did. And the philosophy was the two different ideas of government. The Southerners believed that all governments, local, state, and federal, rest on the consent of the governed. Now, it said that in our Declaration of Independence, but after we got away from England, then the people in the Northeast decided that the consent of the government didn't work if they disagreed with it. So they had to set up another way. Sovereignty resides with the people and not with the government. The Southerners saw the U.S. Constitution being used for protectionism for Northeastern businesses in New York and Philadelphia and Boston, up in that area, and using the South as an agricultural colony, and the money that was made on the taxes or tariffs that were placed on goods coming into the South was what actually propped up the federal government. So the South left, and actually the Constitution we have today is illegal. It was never the representatives that were elected from the states. They weren't appointed by the federal government. The states elected representatives to go to this convention in Philadelphia and amend or adjust or improve the Articles of Confederation, because that's what we were operating our government under after the Revolutionary War, the War for Independence. And people in the North may not want New England and some of the early colonies that became states, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, up in there. They may not want to admit this, but the first country that they were part of was the Confederate States of America, not the United States, because we were living under the Articles of Confederation, and so we were referred to by European countries as the Confederate States of America. Now, the more famous Confederate States of America came along in 1861, but at one time the United States was known as the Confederate States of America. They did not want an all new government. They just wanted the tax problems fixed for revenue for the federal government, and they felt that the power to tax is the power to control. So what happened was, when the South decided we can't live with these people anymore, they're sending crazy people down here to attack us and incite slave uprisings and murder our families. Why do we want to be in a government of lunatics? And so we left peacefully. And they say, well, you know, secession didn't work. Well, it worked fine. You know, the Confederate government worked fine from February of 1861 till our country was invaded in April of 1861. So from February to April, it worked just fine. The U.S. Constitution emphasized a strong central government, and the Confederates wanted a government based on states, the power of the states. They felt like the state government was closer to the people, and they felt like the state government should impose in itself between the national government and the individuals. And they saw that as the main role of the state government, to intercede between a federal government that was becoming too powerful and the local citizens. Now, how do we get right down to it, the nuts and bolts of this? Let's start with the preamble, which we all have, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Okay, how do you define who the we the people are? Is that the individual? Is it the government? When the government wants to impose more controls and restrictions on us and higher taxes, they say that the government is we the people. It's representative of the people. The Confederate preamble said, "We, the representatives of the several states assembled, do hereby ordain and establish," and so forth. So once again, they're going back to say that the states were the most important government for the individual. And this national government had very limited powers, which had been misread in the U.S. Constitution, and were being used against the people. So that's why they wanted that. We'll look at the office of president. The Confederate States of America looked at the office of president and said, now this guy spends his last 2 years in office campaigning for the next four. And so he's kind of, as far as operating the country, he's sort of a lame duck the last 2 years because he's worried about reelected. So the Confederate president shouldn't waste time worrying about reelection. The Confederate president was given a 6-year term, not a 4-year term, but a 6-year term, but you could never be president again. So, Bubba, you better get it right the first time around because you're not going to get a second chance. And don't waste our time or taxpayers' money worrying about being reelected. Now they did give the Confederate president some items that we don't have in our Constitution today. The Confederate president was given a byline veto. And now when a budget comes to the president, Mr. Trump is going to see in a short time, and all these continuing resolutions and spending caps and things like that, it's for the entire government. But the Confederate president could go back with a byline veto and say, now, wait a minute, hold on. We're going to have funding to continue the government and pay for our military. I'm going to veto this bill here for the Senator Jack S. Fogbound Memorial Outhouse. And if you want to bring that back up, you're going to have to bring that up by itself. You cannot attach something like that as a rider to our national spending bill to provide funding for the government or funding for the military or whatever it takes. Some of these pork barrel politics that we know get stuck onto this, like the thing they're talking about, Doge group, Elon Musk and Vivek, they're listing all of the things that are in the budget. The study about how cocaine affects rats, there's like $200,000 or $300,000 spent on that. It just goes on and on for page after page after page. So how would that get into our national budget if it were vetoed by itself, not the entire spending budget? If that item was vetoed, who was going to come back and defend that and say, we need $500,000 to study about how cocaine affects rats and some of the other idiotic things they come up with? Now, another thing they did, and we'll come back after the break and cover some of the other things that they had in the Constitution.
Several things you've talked about that I have never heard. I can't wait to hear the rest of it, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Your liberties, your liberties. listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Snow, freezing rain, and bitter cold.
The National Weather Service says a major winter storm is forecast to produce heavy snow and significant ice starting in the Central Plains and moving east. Lead forecaster Bob Worovec says winter is back.
A lot of cold air in place across the country. It's really setting up the potential for a pretty, very impactful storm. Anywhere from the plains into the lower Missouri Valley, Mississippi Valley, Ohio Valley, and eventually into the East United States over the next several days.
He says 6 to 12 inches of snow forecast to stretch anywhere from Kansas to D.C., Baltimore as temperatures drop. I'm Julie Walker.
Also at townhall.com, a lawmaker says the New Year's Day attacks resulted from weak national security policies from the Biden administration. Here's Bernie Bennett with the story.
Following months of warnings about a resurgent terrorism threat, an Army veteran inspired by ISIS slammed a pickup truck into crowd celebrating New Year's in New Orleans. Republican Congressman Derek Van Orden of Wisconsin tells the Salem Radio Network he wasn't surprised.
Are they linked? I'm not sure. Could they be linked? Absolutely. Was the first one designed to be a signal to President Trump? Potentially. Was the second one? Absolutely.
The former Navy SEAL said this attack and the Cybertruck explosion in Las Vegas on the same day represent a long-standing concern about threats from homegrown extremists who radicalize on their own before committing mass violence in the name of foreign groups. Bernie Bennett reporting.
President Biden has blocked the nearly $15 billion proposed deal for Nippon Steel of Japan to purchase Pittsburgh-based U.S. Steel. This affirms his earlier vow to block the acquisition, saying, quote, "We need major U.S. companies representing the major share of U.S. steelmaking capacity to keep leading the fight on behalf of America's interest." More on these stories at townhall.com.
You know, a lot of times you have to choose between something high quality or something that saves you money. But if you could get both, why not? Especially when it comes to health care, and that is MediShare. You get both. Many families save $500 a month with MediShare, and that's huge. But it's also true that people wind up way more satisfied, too. The member satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. That's because MediShare works. It has for more than 30 years. It's a community of Christians who have shared more than $5 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth. They love the huge PPO network. So, yeah, really, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price in 2 minutes. Here's the number. Just call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. 844-45-BIBLE.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
A V in this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, Blood River Radio family, precious family, we're going to go right back to the Bitter Ender. I'll just make one quick comment. I love that one of the things that the Bitter Ender talked about was I love the fact in the Articles of Confederation where the president could pick and choose. He didn't have to pass an entire spending bill. I mean, you know what? How much more sense could that be? That is brilliant. I mean, who would be against that? But anyway, go ahead.
A byline veto. You could just go through and pick out the pork barrel politics. And like we were referring to that name I always use, that Senator Jackass Fogbound Memorial Outhouse. that came from Little Abner, the cartoon and the musical. And they said, yes, sir, there's no jackass like our jackass. So that's where that came from. But anyway, so that was one of the powers that the Confederate president did have. Another thing was the Confederate president and vice president who were elected, Jefferson Davis and Alexander Stevens, their first year in office, along with the general officers in the military, their rank in the military and their office as president and vice president was provisional. And it automatically ended after 1 year. And we said, well, the president got a 6-year term. Well, that's right. But that was not the permanent government of the Confederacy. That was the provisional government from the time they formed in Montgomery, Alabama in February of 1861 until February of 1862, when the government had been moved up to Richmond. And so, and if you look at the Confederate States seal, it says February 22nd, 1862. And, of course, February 22nd was George Washington's birthday. And that's when the permanent government was put in place. And Jefferson Davis's 6-year term began on February 22nd, 1862. And the year before that, he was just provisional president. And this was a good idea. The reason being, the president, vice president, and some of the high government officials and the general officers in the military were provisional, and so if they weren't doing a good job, when that year was up, their term and their rank, their commission, expired automatically. And you didn't have to go through a court-martial to get rid of the military officers, and you didn't have to go through an impeachment to get rid of the president that just really, after a year, he's not doing a very good job. We better get somebody else. So their terms automatically expired, and their commission automatically expired, and then they could pick out somebody else to replace them. So if you had a general that didn't do well on the battlefield, his commission for general was going to expire in a year anyway, and you could tell him, well, thank you very much, but we really don't think you're a combat-type material. We think we're going to have you running the button-making factory down at Valdosta, Georgia, and that's the way you can help the cause, but not out on the field.
Chief, so, got a quick question.
Fire away.
Well, you may not know this. In present day, modern day Army, with general officers, and I'm thinking about that worthless piece of crap that General Milley, do they have to court-martial general officers in today's military and the military before the Confederacy?
They get rid of them. Yeah, they would have to. Have to bring charges against them. But here's another thing they do, Eddie. And they can tell a guy, you know, if you get called before a courts martial and you lose your retirement. And wow. I've seen this happen, that they will say, you are a major and you are a total screw-up. We will promote you to lieutenant colonel and give you your full benefits as a lieutenant colonel if you will resign.
Wow.
So they make the deal. You know, instead of going through a court martial or, you know, dragging your name through that or having to go through all this and, you know, who knows how that's going to turn out, we'll promote you to the next rank and you resign, and you'll still get your government benefits that you had have acquired, and you know your benefits are prorated according to what your rank was. A general is going to get a lot more retirement than a second lieutenant or something like that. So you know they can do that to get rid of somebody. Say, yeah, well, you need to retire and keep your benefits, or we'll even promote you to the next highest rank and get your benefits for that if you'll go ahead and retire and get out. You're not doing very well. You're not going to get promoted, and you get passed over so many times, and then you have to resign, and you'd wind up losing your benefits. So what they would do is say, yeah, we'll promote you to the next rank if you'll just go ahead and voluntarily resign, and good luck, and go open up a car dealership or whatever else you want to do.
Yeah, it's so interesting. That's one of the many, 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 many things I didn't know.
Well, now here's another thing. This is kind of off the track a little bit, but you hear all these people, the South haters and the liberals and the communists on the Communist News Network and all this kind of stuff on TV. They ought to tear down these statues to Lee and Jackson and all these people. They were traitors. They took an oath to be defend the United States, and they took an oath as an officer in the United States Army, and then they turned against it and fought against it. They don't know anything about military. An officer has a different set of rules as applied to an enlisted man. Enlisted man signs up for so many years, and you can't get out of that unless they want you out. And then, like I said, could be a court-martial, something like that, to boot you out. An officer, on the other hand, signs up, gets commissioned, and he has a minimal amount that he has to serve. I was commissioned a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, had a three-year commitment to the Marine Corps. Now, after that, I could have stayed in and done my 20 years and retired whatever rank I was going to be after 20 years. I'd probably only get one promotion from second lieutenant to first lieutenant.
Oh, seriously.
But anyway, after that initial 3 years, once an officer turns in his letter of resignation, he's out. And he has no commitment to the United States government anymore after that. So that's what Lee and Jackson and Stewart and all of these officers that had been in the United States Army did. They turned in their letter of resignation. They were no longer a member of the United States military. They were basically civilians. And so when their states left the Union, then they requested to be given a commission, or they were offered a commission in the military of their new country, the Confederate States of America. So how could they be traitors if they were no longer citizens of the United States? Now, if they had stayed in the United
Excellent
States
point.
Army, if they'd stayed in the U.S. Army and spent their time burning bridges and cutting telegraph lines and blowing up supply depots, yes, that would be a traitor if they were still in the United States Army or the United States military. But once they resigned, they were no longer a part of the United States military. And they were then citizens of Alabama or Tennessee or Virginia or North Carolina or wherever, and so they offered their services to their state government. And that's not being a traitor. If you're in another country, how could you be a traitor if you're not in the United States military? So anyway, thought we'd throw that out there.
Getting
back to the Constitution here. Another thing the Constitution did, Confederate Constitution did, it addressed the question of slavery. And that was never addressed in the United States Constitution. That was something they always brought up in Congress, but they just kept kicking it down the road, and hopefully the next administration would figure out what to do about it. And the Confederate Constitution addressed it. They said the question of slavery is up to the states, whether they want to have slavery or if they want to ban it in their state. And it's the same thing with the new territories coming into the Confederate States of America that request statehood. And the new territory coming in, if they want to have slavery, that's their call. If they don't want to have slavery, that's their call. It's not something the federal government is going to dictate to. One other thing that I thought was pretty interesting from reading Professor DeRosa's book, the Confederate Constitution required all executive department heads to be on the floor of Congress when in session so they could be questioned. What? About their department, their management, their budget requests, or whatever. So if you have somebody that's head of the Department of Justice, he can't run off and hide somewhere and, you know, stall and give interviews to his favorite news outlets or something, and has to be subpoenaed and drug into Congress and threatened to get him to testify. The department heads had to be there on the floor of Congress when Congress was in session, so they could turn right around to him and say, okay, what happened here? Why are you sending 45 FBI agents to arrest an older gentleman that was a Trump supporter? Why'd you do that? You know, and so you're there while Congress is in session, and you have to answer all of these questions. So that was another thing in the Confederate Constitution. Another item in the Confederate Constitution, which is required in a lot, and I think probably almost all of our state constitutions, it required the Confederate government to have a balanced budget at the end of the year. And the only way they could not have a balanced budget was if there was a national emergency, like a war. So we will wrap up our last segment and give our listeners a little bit more information and then close for the evening.
Boy, you're hitting on all cylinders, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing, and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I have learned so much. You know what? I'm going to make this quick. I told Gene, and I used to talk about the Constitution. But what Gene has educated me tonight, the Constitution we have right now is a damn train wreck. It's a joke. But go ahead, Gene. Oh, but well, one more thing. That's why Patrick Henry. I always knew Patrick Henry said that. What he said, but I never knew why. But go ahead, Gene. You're on fire, Gene.
Well, the thing was, the Constitution we have today basically is illegal. The delegates that were appointed or elected from the states to go to Philadelphia and revise the Articles of Confederation, they were not given the power to create an all new document. But that's what they did, because the Constitutional Convention was pretty much dominated by the Federalists. And they were from the Northeast. They wanted to protect the business interests of the Northeast. They did not want these, what they saw, backward hill people, country bumpkins from the South, and conservatives having power in the national government. So people like Alexander Hamilton and the Adams family members and things like that. They wanted a strong central government. In fact, Alexander Hamilton wanted a monarch. He wanted a king.
One central bank.
And yes, and money to be controlled by New York and Boston and up through there. And so that's why Patrick Henry said he wasn't going to support this. And he wasn't going as a delegate. He wasn't going to support it when it came to a vote in Virginia. His quote was, said, "I smell a rat." And he was exactly right. Because we got a lot more than what we had bargained for with this new constitution that they came up with. And it can be used, and I'm sure probably if we'd stayed with the Articles of Confederation, you would have still had the same criminal element taking over the government in Washington that would bend the rules to take care of their big business buddies or whatever they needed to do. But just for instance, I'll give you one example. The state of West Virginia actually is an illegitimate state because in the Constitution that we do have, a state cannot be made out of another state unless two-thirds of the original state vote to allow that new state to be made out of their old state. So the entire state of Virginia never got to vote on whether West Virginia was going to be a state or not. Lincoln wanted two more Republican senators, and he wanted another Republican representative in Congress to stack the Congress with Republicans and keep the Northern Democrats, or Copperheads as they called them, out of power. And so by making the state, he got two more Republican senators. And West Virginia, the counties along the Ohio River, like from south of Pittsburgh, Wheeling, and on down those, they were very pro-union because all of their trade, they couldn't go over the mountains and trade with Richmond. I mean, there was no interstate highway system. There's no way in the world. By the time they got their products over the mountain to Richmond, they'd all be spoiled. So they had to trade with Cincinnati going south or up to Pittsburgh going north. So the three counties along the Ohio River were very pro-Union. But the rest of the counties in western part of Virginia were very much pro-Southern, except the Federal Army came in and took over the state, and then they were going to have an election to secede the western counties from the eastern counties in Virginia. Now, Lincoln said that you can't secede from the federal government. He claimed that the government was here before the states, and I've never been able to figure out that convoluted logic. He said that the union was here before the states, so states could not leave the union. And that's why he sent an army and down here to force us at gunpoint to be a part of his axis of evil empire. So what he did was illegal in saying that, you know, we can take these western counties from the state of Virginia, we'll just create a new state, and we'll have two Republican senators, another Republican representative in Congress, and pack Congress with pro-war, pro-Lincoln, basically communist Marxist leadership in Washington. And that will keep the Northern Democrats, or the Copperheads, as they called them, under control and keep them as a minority party in Washington. And we can prosecute this war against the South. And they can whine about it, but they can't do anything about it. So that's I've heard people say the Constitution is a piece of paper, and there's no way it can protect us unless the people in government want to follow the Constitution. Well, if they don't follow the Constitution, they've got the national military. Who's going to stop them? They've got the courts on their side. You file lawsuits in court and appeals, and they've got all the money of the federal government to throw your case out or bankrupt you trying to win a case. So that's why Patrick Henry said, "I smell a rat. I don't want any part of this," and what they've gotten us into there. So that's what we're looking at today, and I hope that our listeners have gained some information on what a excellent document the Confederate Constitution really was. And like I said, they had 80 years to look at the old one and say, you know, that looked good on paper, but that didn't really work out too well in practicality. So we're going to change that. And they didn't have to amend the Confederate Constitution to do it. They started with a blank sheet of paper and started from the preamble we the representatives of the several states assembled do hereby ordain and establish and so forth. So they started from the preamble all the way down through the whole thing. And the Bill of Rights was actually included in the original Confederate Constitution. They didn't have to add a Bill of Rights like George Mason did to get the U.S. Constitution passed. A lot of the states weren't going to pass it unless they had more specific guarantee of rights for the individuals. Those individual rights were already included in the Confederate Constitution. So it wasn't an amendment process that a certain number of the states had to approve it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, go through all of that. That was already in the Confederate Constitution. I like our First Amendment, Second Amendment, and so forth and so on. That's about what we had to cover, and I hope we got some good information out there to the folks. I would highly recommend, if they get a chance, to get a copy of that book by Thomas Wood, National Divorce, A Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences. And he lays out the case for secession and saying we have gotten to a point in this country where we are so split, there's no compromise. At one time we talked about, okay, the people on the right want this, people on the left want that. Let's kind of meet somewhere in the middle. And now we don't have that anymore. You know, if you want to compromise, you're conservative, you're a neo-Nazi, and you're this and you're that and everything, and we call them communists and perverts and whatever. There is no middle ground. And he makes a point in that book. Why do we have to have 50 states? What's the magic number about 50? What if we had 70 states and let these states split off and form the type of government that the people in that section of the state really want? For instance, Eastern Oregon is nothing like Western Oregon, Portland, and over there on the coast. You know, they're farmers in Eastern Oregon. They don't want to be a part of the left coast of Oregon. They'd rather be part of Idaho or some other state, or have their own state. And when I traveled out in California with the rodeos, people up in Northern California, there was talk about, I don't know if it really got serious about it, but forming another state, California. And they didn't want to be a part of Southern California and have all of their money and all of their water, which is really the sticking point on this, all of their water taken out of Northern California and sent down to San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego. And then those big population centers could outvote them in the capital of Sacramento and take whatever they wanted. Take their tax money, take their water, take their land for government projects. And that's why they were talking about having two states, North California and South California. So that was the point that Thomas Wood's making. Why do we have to have 50 states and force these people to be together? We have nothing in common with Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi and all the politicians from California. They have nothing in common with us. They hate us as much as we hate them.
Yes.
So why should we have to live under a government that hates us, that has representatives and senators that hate us, and we hate them? Have an overall military to protect, say, 60 states or 70 states. Kind of like Switzerland. They'd have those, what do they call them, cantons that are parts of the different part of the country, but they operate pretty much independently. And then you would have some type of national organization if the country were invaded by Russia or China or whoever, call up the military from these 60 states or whatever you had there. And you could have military bases around wherever they needed them, but there's not necessarily a reason to force people to be a part of an organization that they really don't want to be a part of, and it's so different from them.
Well, I'll tell you what a hell of a lesson you've given us tonight, Gene. I have learned so much myself. I just hope I can remember in my old brain.
Well, maybe there'll be a test next week. Bring number two pencil and a blue book.
I'll get little Lizzie to swish my ear. Help me cheat on this test.
She can pass it for you.
Oh, no doubt about it. Well, thank you so much, Bitter Ender. I'll tell you what, you really knocked it out of the park tonight. You really did, brother. I appreciate that. You're doing such a hell of a service, so that's for sure. So, but oh, yes, yes. Speaking of your young brain, Miss Little Lizzie said we need to put us in the URL code for the second hour. It's castfootball.us. Castfootball.us. Thank you so much, Miss Teenage America. Well, good night, everybody.